This is James Corbett of the Corbett Report. It's currently the 26th of August, 2009 in the UK, where I'm joined on the line by Charlie Skelton, an Oxford graduate, journalist and features writer for The Guardian and The Evening Standard, and a comedian whose writing credits include The 11 O'Clock Show, Have I Got News for You, and Fack You. Earlier this year, he went to Voulamini, Greece to report on the Bilderberg Conference for The Guardian and ended up getting more of a story than he had bargained for. Mr. Skelton, thank you for joining me on the show today.
Nice to speak to you.
Well, tell us about your Grecian sojourn this year. How did a comedy writer from Suffolk end up flying off to Greece to cover a secretive meeting of elite power players for one of the largest newspapers in Europe?
Well, it happened like this. I was thinking about Bilderberg one day. I didn't know that much about it. But I just crossed my mind. Two thoughts hit me at once. One, that there probably wasn't going to be anyone reporting on it. And number two, I might be able to. And it just struck me as a kind of thought that I might actually go and do it. Because I had some contacts at the Guardian newspaper, you know. I've written for it before, and I know someone that works on the website. So I pitched an idea, and I said, look, how about I go and talk about it? And I was a little bit disingenuous. I wanted to be more serious about the subject than I could admit to being. So I said, look, I'm going to go and do a funny piece. It'll be funny. I'm sure I'll have some silly experiences. Who knows what'll go on. And I'll write you a kind of, you know, little gonzo-ish piece. And I didn't know what I was going to find out. So I said, look, I'll write you something funny. And it turned into a nightmare.
Well, it was certainly interesting to read the reports as they were coming out, because the first reports seemed to be making light of the idea that you were being followed and that the Secret Service was everywhere. But it got to a certain point where it didn't seem so much like a joke.
I couldn't believe it. It really was life imitating comedy. Because I turned up, because I didn't have anything to write about the very first day. So I just wrote about my thought processes, which were basically, how funny it would be if I was being followed at this point. So I wrote about that, and you know, I did make light of it. And a few days later, I was just sitting there thinking, I cannot believe I was thinking how funny it would be to be followed around when I was being followed around and arrested constantly, and just thinking my world has turned into some kind of dystopian hell.
Well, dystopian hell seems like a good word for what you experienced. But for those listeners out there who haven't read some of the reports, what were some of the highlights or lowlights, I guess, of the experience?
Well, the highlight at first was when I realized I was being followed for the very first time. It didn't cross my mind that I would be, never crossed my mind, that I would be followed. I laughed thinking I might, but I never really thought I was. And I got out one day, went out, out of the hotel, and I just realized that these two guys were following me, and so I walked through a restaurant. I sort of walked up, turned around. I kept an eye on them. I thought, God, they really are following me. And I went through a restaurant, double backed on myself, as if I was in a movie, you know. And I turned around, I hid behind a hedge, and then stepped out when this guy who had obviously lost me was looking around for me. And I said, look, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're following me. And he was completely perplexed, the fact that I'd managed to blow his cover within about 2 minutes. And that was fun. It was fun and it was exciting. And I realized that the police were following me, because they were obviously police, because they started asking me questions. You know, they were questioning me already. That's what I thought, they were obviously police. But the questions to the identity of the people following me became more and more complicated and really became the story. And as I got more and more annoyed about being followed, and the basically harassment of it got more, it became more serious and it stopped being fun very quickly.
Well, at any point did anyone actually identify themselves to you or try to explain what was happening?
They were very careful not to. They obviously were police, the people in, I thought, obviously, in Voulamini. But no, they asked me police questions like, you know, how long are you staying here? You know, these big guys in plain clothes. How long are you staying here? You know, what are you doing? What are you writing? What's your job? How many weeks are you here in Greece, etc., etc. Police style questions, the kind of thing that some random person wouldn't ask, a random stalker, let's say. But the question as to the identity of these people became really what, as I said, became my quest, and I ended up leaving Vuliagmeni, where the Bilderberg was. I barely even saw the front gates. That's how difficult it was to get near anywhere without just being arrested. And I took one photograph of the police outside the gates of the hotel. That was about the limits of my journalism in terms of what I actually managed to get of Bilderberg. And I never went near the gates again because I was just being arrested and being followed. And I basically kept going back to the police station saying, who are these people following me? Can you make it stop? I think they're police. And they go, no, it's not police. And I say, they really are. Look, they're standing over there talking to your police, talking to your uniformed policeman. They really are police. And they said, no, you're not being followed. And then I'd be arrested again and brought in, and they'd say, what are you doing? And I'd say, look, I'm barely doing anything. I'm literally trying not to be arrested. And, so yes, I got arrested at one point for taking a photograph of the wheels of a limousine as it zoomed up the hill towards the hotel. I mean, that was the level of paranoia that was being shown.
Well, you never know what dastardly deeds could be done with a picture of wheels on a limousine.
No.
Well, let's cut to the punchline then. So in your last report, you came out with the following. You said, quote, "My experience over the last several days in Greece has granted me a single diamond heart opinion, meaning I now have two, that John McEnroe is the greatest sportsman of all time, and that we must fight now, right now, this second, with every cubic inch of our souls to stop identity cards." End quote. So now, I must admit, when I was reading that at the time, I wasn't exactly sure the line of connection between Bilderberg and ID cards. So where exactly did this diamond heart opinion come from?
It came from the relationship that built up between me and the plainclothes state police, and it came from the way that I was treated as a I would suggest law-abiding citizen going about a very, very low-level piece of journalism. I suddenly found myself being challenged all the time as to who are you, what are you, prove your identity. And the fact that I had to prove my identity being the sort of crux of the potential to arrest me. And I found my status as an individual, as a citizen of the world and pottering around Greece, I suddenly found it very fragile, and I suddenly realized, because basically what happened was that the force of Bilderberg as a force of paranoia and control up in that hotel had forced the security forces around there to be hypersensitive and to harass the journalists, the very, very few, you know, bloggers and journalists who were there. And so I felt the force through the police. And then I left Vuliagmeni, went to Athens, and was still being harassed. And it was the fact that the sort of pressure from Bilderberg was causing this harassment of me. And I genuinely, and I'm not underestimating what I'm saying is harassment, I ended up wrestling with the police in a Greek metro station. It was full on. It was full on kind of parallax view stuff. It was horrific. And it was so constant, and I felt so undermined as an individual that I thought, no, we can't have this thing where my status as a law-abiding individual is constantly in question. You know, I'm not doing wrong. I'm just hanging out. I'm just being here. I wasn't even near the thing. I ended up going 20 miles away, or it is, to Athens. I'm not doing anything. I'm literally staying in a hotel, and I'm still being followed. And it was all about that. It was about my status as a law-abiding citizen and what I would consider one of, you know, broadly speaking, one of the good guys. I'm not really causing trouble in the world, I don't like to think. And yet I was criminalized by my very sort of being there. You know, criminalized is probably the wrong word, but sort of potentially criminalized. I suddenly found myself questioned all the time, questioned. And, you know, and literally they were saying to me, show me your papers. And it's all a bit kind of, it's all a bit World War II, Nazi movie stuff. And, you know, I say Nazi movies, it did happen. but you know what I mean. It was all a bit fascistic. I didn't like it.
Well, I'm going to disagree strongly that John McEnroe was the greatest sportsman of all time, but I'll wholeheartedly agree with your other diamond hard opinion, because I think that's a very good perception at the moment. We seem to be entering an era of politics where innocent until proven guilty is becoming guilty until proven innocent. And one facet, important facet of that, especially right now in the UK, they're starting to implement the national ID card and biometric IDs for everyone in the country. And it's important to understand exactly how that undermines our legal system and all the basic precepts of the society we're living in. So was this an issue that you had thought about before, or was it something that really only occurred to you at Bilderberg?
It's not anything I've thought about with any clarity, no. And it's put a lot of other things into perspective. And I went driving across Europe recently, and across Spain and Portugal and France, and came up back across the Channel on a ferry and came into Britain. And I suddenly realized, my God, the number of cameras, the sheer number of CCTV cameras, security cameras, I'm being filmed all the time. And I'd sort of forgotten that. But that kind of thing, the awareness of that level of monitoring has really, it brought things like that into clarity. And I think CCTV cameras is exactly the same issue, personally. I think it's the same thing of, you know, monitoring the population in a way that's sort of shifting towards guilty until proven innocent. I think it's the same principles at work as ID cards.
Absolutely. Well, so how has this affected your day-to-day life, or has it not affected your sort of daily living?
Well, I've had to put a lot of it on hold, a lot of thinking about things and low-level activism, simply because I had a lot of work on, which is finally coming to an end. Which actually, that's a big issue, the fact that we haven't got any time in our lives to think about these things because have to work so hard. That's a whole other aspect of what I've been thinking about, which is, you know, the way that we're physically and mentally and socially unable to think about a lot of these things. But, you know, I've got a bit of free time coming up. I'm going to be planning to go to the next Bilderberg. I've got an email address, which I put on the Guardian pieces that I wrote on the Guardian website, and people have replied to me via that email and said, "Yes, I'm going to come along." Because I said I've opened up, said let's all go, let's have more people, because you know the more people, the merrier, and it'll be the harder to arrest people, and the more pointless it will be to arrest people. I'll be planning that, but that's a longer term thing. That'll be next spring, I assume, somewhere in the world, and. Any little things that I'm planning to do, but the whole experience has certainly, you know, without sounding too ridiculous, has raised my consciousness of things like this, and made me a little bit more aware, which is good. You know, at the time I wouldn't have chosen to be chased around Athens by plainclothes policemen. And jumping into cabs to try and evade them and things like that. But you know, in retrospect, I'm kind of glad, because it has given me some opinions that it would have taken me longer to develop, let's say.
Well, it is good to know that people have taken you up on that offer to join you in salting the slug, as you put it, at Bilderberg 2010. And I kind of thought that email address was not real, but it actually is a real email address.
Yeah, well, you've raised an interesting question there, which is, My identity was questioned by a lot of people who were interested in uncovering the Bilderberg story and finding out more. And you know, I was on various websites and forums was declared a shill, you know, or a big media shill, just a liar, all of this kind of thing. And people were saying I was a spy, which is hilarious. And well, it's kind of sad actually, but. Sad, probably, because I'm not a spy. A bit more interesting, people don't believe you when you're saying things. It's very odd because there's so much distrust, and that distrust of the lies that governments tell their citizens has bled over into the distrust of one another, which unfortunately is one of the key ways to run a fascistic state, is to have everyone distrust each other, you know. And that's really horrible. That's worse than distrusting your government, is distrusting your fellow citizen. Anyway,
that is a profound point to make, though, because when a system is run and based on lies and secrecy, then obviously the effect is to have everyone questioning each other. So it really does break down basic bonds of society.
It's certainly known as how East Germany would work, for example. You know, it's just, no one knows who anyone is, and everyone suspects everyone. Everyone's living in abject terror. God's sake, I'm not living in East Germany. I'm not naive. I'm not saying that, but you know, you can see how principles can be applied and used and things like that.
Well, that's absolutely right. So if people are out there are interested in joining Bilderberg 2010 and helping to salt the slug, what was that email address again? Bilderberg2010@yahoo.co.uk?
That's exactly it, yeah.
Okay.
Drop me a line and, come along to... It's a bit difficult because it's people only find out at the very last minute where it is. So it's kind of hard to plan to go there. But I'm going to do my best to not miss it.
If it were within the realm of possibility, I would be there with you, but I'm not sure. So maybe not. Well, Mr. Skelton, tell us about some of the other work that you do. For example, tell us about the Clacton Festival.
Oh, well, that's a not very political organization. It's a little arts festival that I help run by the English Seaside in a town called Clacton, which has seen better days. But we just get together and perform things and put on some modern dance and some plays and some music and then bake cakes. And then there's a cake competition, which I won last year. No, the year before last. So I was very pleased about that.
That is very good.
But, yeah. Although it looks a bit suspicious since I was the organizer. Anyway, I actually, on a serious note, that I think it's the kind of thing... In a small way, doing something like that, which I think is very important. I think it's important to do interesting things and to do different things, and to try and do interesting and different things, because our culture is so monochromatic at the moment. And I work in television. That's my career is unfortunately to create part of the general monochromatic spectacle that is just generally hypnotizing us, which is. You know, I do find a real conflict. And I remember waking up to that horrible realization that I was part of the problem a few years ago. And it's actually quite an odd thing to be doing, because I genuinely am aware that in the main, television is part of the problem. Obviously, it's not, you know, it's not a bad thing in and of itself, but if you look at what television materially is, then I'd say it is a problem. So, you know, I think going out and standing on a stage and reading a poem out is an incredibly healthy, mentally and culturally healthy thing to do, and we should do more of it.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think that television culture has replaced so much of the other arts and entertainment that used to be such a vital part of our society, so it's good to hear that confirmed by someone who actually works in television.
Another thing I find odd about television is how much of it there is. I find that terrifying. It's an absolutely vast organism. You look at the TV listings, and how could you even begin to watch even a tiny, tiny proportion of it? And there's a sheer weight of television that sits on people. I find kind of unpleasant. It's a vast sort of overcoat that sits over people, and they sort of think, oh God, what should I be watching? I've got to get through some more TV. And it's no wonder we can't think about anything. With that much TV to watch, how could we think? We've got you know, Big Brother to watch, or Survivor, or whatever. America's Got Talent. There's so much to watch. It's like a job. It's like a full-time job watching television.
Well, perhaps that's why I think a television critic would be the most nightmarish profession imaginable, because I couldn't imagine watching that much TV.
Yeah, I think it does drive people mad. I met one once, and he said he was just sitting in hotel rooms with sort of stacks of videotapes. And he sounded like he was going to hang himself, yes.
Sounds like the seventh circle of hell to me. So, Mr. Skelton, if my listeners are interested in following your work, what would be the best website to go to?
Oh, goodness. I don't know. I don't know. Hopefully, I'll do some more stuff on The Guardian. So, I wouldn't say I'm very followable. I'll just pop up somewhere or other.
Okay. Well, we'll keep our eye out for you anyway. Well, Mr. Skelton, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Good to talk to you.